Today's episode includes a reference to suicide and institutional abuse. Please take care whilst listening, and for signposting to support, visit our website, anyamedia.net/liveliminds. Hello, my name is Will.
And my name is Ellie.
You are listening to Lively Minds, the podcast about mental health challenges that go beyond the ebb and flow of the everyday.
The podcast that is less about how we deal with our mental health and more about how we understand it in the first place.
A few weeks ago, we did a three-part mini-series about Ellie's experiences of both working in and being admitted to mental health hospital. We asked you, our listeners, to get in touch with your thoughts and questions. And this is the second of two episodes in which Ellie is answering them.
All of the questions were brilliant and all of them gave me a lot of food for thought.
If you haven't heard our three episode mini-series on mental health hospitals, you might want to go back and listen to that before listening to this episode.
And this episode will be the last in our first series of Lively Minds, so we'll be going on a break after this show and we'll return on the 24th of January.
If you enjoyed the first series, then between now and then, please do help us reach more listeners by rating or reviewing our show on your podcast app. And please tell a couple of friends, spread the word. Ellie and I do this show completely voluntarily, and it would really make our day if you could. In fact, I would go as far as saying, Ellie, that it would be a lovely Christmas present if our listeners could do that for us, wouldn't you say?
Or in my case, a Hanukkah present.
Or in your case, a Hanukkah
present. It would be lovely.
It would be lovely, wouldn't it? So our next question comes from Sarah, and I think this is a good question. It's an interesting question. Sarah asks, if mental health hospitals were modelled on your vision of an ideal and genuinely healing inpatient healthcare setting, do you think this could ever justify removing someone's freedom as to whether they are admitted or not?
Yeah.
Oh, that's that answer then? Okay, move on to the next question.
No, the answer is not yeah. The answer is not yeah. The answer is not yes. The reason I said yeah is because I was thinking, well, when I read the questions beforehand, I was like thinking about what to say for each of them. And this was one of the ones where I was like, so if the hospitals were this ideal, genuinely healing inpatient healthcare setting, could this ever justify removing someone's freedom as to whether they are admitted or not? I think that's really complicated because I know people who have been very close to successfully taking their own life, and a level of kind of emergency intervention is probably the only reason that they're still here today. And so I can't ever fully say that I don't think ever remove someone's freedom just because, and those people, friends, would say the same, that they're happy they're here today because they were stopped. So in those very, quite literally life or death scenarios, yeah, intervening, even if that means taking away someone's choice in that moment and freedom in that moment, yes, I do think that that is a justification, I think. But in terms of how we actually, in the UK, used forced admission, which is not just for those situations, no. I think it would be like in those very particular sort of knife point balancing where things could tip one way or the other.
Yeah.
I do agree, obviously. But in terms of when we admit people, forced admission for people who are hallucinating and hearing voices, but not hurting anyone else, not taking their own life. No, I don't agree with that. And the other issue we have in the UK, this is like too long to get into in this episode, but another issue with forced admissions in the UK is that someone might have gone in under forced admission in that kind of knife point moment that I just talked about, but then they're not being allowed out again. And that is, yeah, that would still be a problem.
Yeah, maybe that's another podcast episode, maybe to sort of talk about in those situations, who makes those decisions and how are the decisions made? What is that tipping point? And what needs to change to make that a more transparent and accountable process?
Yeah.
Maybe that's a future episode.
Yeah.
Thank you, Ellie. Shall we move on to the next question?
Yeah.
Or is there anything else you want to say about that?
No, go on to the next one.
Bridie says, I found Ellie's account extremely sobering, but told in such an engaging and at times extremely funny way. I've never heard an account like it, which makes me realise how much of a hidden world it is, and I guess that's a big part of the problem. My question is, what does Ellie think would be one useful thing that we, e.g. society, allies, compassionate, but not necessarily personally affected people, can effectively focus our energies and resources on to help make the options better for people who are being put in this horrendous situation?
Yeah, it's a really good question. And yeah, you're right about it being hidden, because lots of people don't know about what sort of goes on. And, you know, of course, there's the big panorama about everything that happened at Edenfield, and that really opened people's eyes to a lot of what has been going on, quote unquote, under our noses for people who don't have indirect experiences of mental health hospitals by visiting people or whatever. What can people do? I think there's sort of two areas. One is in terms of focusing your energies and resources on to make the options better. The best thing to do would be to just do a very light, like, bit of research locally. What campaigning groups are there who campaign for holistic and kind of alternative approaches to mental health? Because actually, how, you know, it can start at a local level. They are always writing to MPs, lobbying. As a result, they were on the BBC being interviewed after the Edenfield documentary came out. And that's the start of how change happens, getting it up to, in terms of how our political system works. That's, you need MPs on board. You need them to talk about it. You need it to be brought up in Parliament where these decisions can be made. And actually campaigning and supporting local or whatever groups who are, where that is their focus, and there will be some. That's one way in terms of generally. Voice your support. Also, I think talking to other people about it, if it comes up casually in conversation, just being more open and talking about how our mental health is structured in the UK and what kind of things are happening to people in hospitals and how it's a bit crap. The other thing would be to kind of have a look at local mental health charities in general and see if there's something you can get involved in, because some, you know, you might be able to, I don't know, donate like DVDs and films and board games and things to a local hospital. That's a bit naff, but do you know what I mean? It's like, just have a look locally, I think, would be a good start. And then in terms of personally, if you know someone who is in the hospital, everyone's totally different. Like, you and I, Will, have spoken about how it's quite funny because I'm like quite extrovert, you're more introverted. But then in times of crisis, you would be more likely to ask for other people's help and want to be around people, whereas in my times of crisis, I just like literally don't want anyone near me. So everyone's very different. So I would say ask people if they want to be visited. Definitely keep in touch with them a lot, because people do want to know that you're thinking of them, even if they're not in a position where they really want to speak to anyone. Just maintaining that contact. And if they would like visitors, do go and visit them. Because actually lots of people don't, because people are quite scared of mental health hospitals and feel really uncomfortable about it, because there's a lot of stigma surrounding it and people don't want to go and visit. And that is really sad. And that's how people end up feeling really left alone.
We can move on to our final question. This one is from Judith, who says, I was truly shocked to hear about Ellie's experience in the hospital. I recognise that your experience reflects a massively broken and dislocated system. I wonder what advice on first steps you would give to a government that genuinely wanted to move fast on mending it.
Well, number one, put more money into it. Stop seeing it as a kind of specialist, like an add-on to the important health stuff. It is a core health need and health situation. Fund it appropriately. Secondly, decentralise the mental health care. Reinvest, like the model we used to have, reinvest in community-based mental health care, supporting people to live at home within their community, prioritising people's quality of life, not removing all of the support they could have. Of course, it also makes it harder for people to get out of hospital when there's no community support for them to be supported when they leave hospital. So that often means that people are then stuck in an inpatient setting for longer because there's not any adequate support to support them outside of the hospital. That's just a ridiculous situation.
Yeah. It's interesting,
isn't it?
It needs
to just be decentralised, yeah.
We hear about that quite a lot in relation to non-mental health hospitals. We hear about the social care crisis and how elderly people are having to stay in hospital because there isn't the community support out there to look after them, but we don't hear it about it on the news, etc., to the same degree about mental health.
And ultimately, it's adult social care. It's the same crisis. There's also a crisis of staffing. We need to more bursaries and funding for people to become mental health social workers, or for people to... A greater valuing of experts by experience would also be brilliant, and more role, more jobs, more sort of support worker type roles within the community as part of the reinvesting all that money into community services and community mental health teams. We just prioritise all the wrong things, and centralising, when I say centralising, I don't mean centralising as in like nationally to London. I mean like locally. So Greater Manchester, for example, the communities, instead of reinvesting in, instead of investing more in community-based mental health care and support and those kinds of community-based services, the funding available gets put into one kind of mega mental health hospital in North Manchester, is the decision that's been made. And like, literally, what, to me, that just makes no sense. Mm. We need to not do that. That would be, I think, the first, if a new kind of ideal, the ideal government just suddenly came in and said, this is what we want to do, like, we want to make this better and we want to move as quickly as possible, that would, starting there, starting by putting, first of all, putting more money into it, but putting more money into supporting people in the community, not putting more money into creating more inpatient beds in one super mental health hospital. Mm. That is what I would hope they would do.
Yeah. Well, we have an election in a year or less. So if anyone's listening, we probably shouldn't get into the party politics, as we'll be here all night, won't we? Thank you so much, Ellie, for that. That's really been very interesting. And thank you also to everybody who sent in questions and thoughts. We've been really impressed with the questions and thoughts that have come in, just some really thoughtful.
Yeah, they were really brilliant. They really made me think and really made me question also, like a lot of... It's always good to re-examine the grey areas of your thoughts and opinions, I think. And some of those questions did make me do that. So that's just brilliant. And thank you for listening to my account as well, because it's nice to know that, I don't know, that people listen to it and that some people found it interesting or funny or whatever. Thank you so much, everyone, for listening. Please do tune in again from January the 24th, when we'll return for season 2 of Lively Minds, the Mental Health Podcast.
As ever, please note that this show does not constitute medical advice and is not a replacement for seeking professional help. But you can find signposting to support on our website, which is aniamedia.net/Lively Minds.
Make sure you keep up to date with our shows by subscribing wherever you get your podcasts.
Take care and bye-bye for now.
Bye-bye for now.